everybody, it's Paul Gager. This is the MTOM Show podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. First, I want to say thank you to all of you who submitted a gift of support to help the Market to Market TV show through our Iowa PBS pledging efforts. If you have not joined in on the party and are looking for thank you gifts, maybe not this coat this year. We didn't pledge that this year, but we did pledge some pretty cool things. You can go to our website of markettomarket.org, and there'll be a link there that you can find to support this program. We continue to do work that we think you're interested in, and if you value what it is that we do, if you listen or watch, and I know hundreds and thousands of you do, here's your chance to make sure that hundreds and thousands more can see what it is that we do. And what we're doing this week is discussing the Illinois farm family with Chad Bell. Chad was the star. Okay, maybe he won't say star, but he was featured in a Super Bowl advertisement that was run through all state, all of Illinois on the Super Bowl. We find out what that was like, how he was cut. His speaking lines were cut. It's injustice. No, he never had speaking lines, but how he acted in that spot, why that spot was done. And then we learn a little bit also about his social media, how he connects with those off the farm as well as on the farm. And we learn about what his operation is in Viola, Illinois, which is about, it's in Mercer County. So that's northwest Illinois, a little south of the Davenport area on the Iowa side of the Quad Cities. So Moline, Rock Island on the Illinois side, Davenport, Bettendorf on the Iowa side, if you're familiar. So let's find out from Chad Bell what he has to say about farming in 2023, what it is he does on his operation, and we hope you enjoy this conversation. Chad, are those pictures of your farm right behind you, or do you just have some really good stock footage photos for your walls?
Those are pictures that I took on my own farm.
So a little hobby photography, or how'd that come about?
Well, It's not really a hobby. It's just ever since I've gotten an iPhone about 10 years ago, I just have always been someone that likes to take pictures from around the farm and post on social media. So I have a few thousand on my phone and just some random things, and then some really nice pictures like those in the background.
So are you more of an Instagram, a Twitter, a Facebook, or are you into some other are you still a MySpace guy?
I did have a MySpace profile, but I don't know if that is still out there or not. But I guess I got started with Facebook back at the beginning. It started when I was in college. I do have Instagram. I very rarely use it. But now here in the last, about a year ago, I got started on TikTok. And that's between TikTok and Facebook are my two main platforms.
Who do you think you're talking to on Instagram or TikTok?
I don't really know. My TikTok, I do certain videos seem to have a further reach to just general consumers and even across the world. I've gotten a lot of questions from across the pond, even from certain countries, especially to do with pig production. And, otherwise, a lot of them seem to be within the United States is where a lot of the interaction that I see.
Do you do a lot of Q&A with people that ask you, or do you just look at the comments, or do you actually do posts about some of your questions that come in?
Yeah, so I do try to respond to as many as I can, and either just with a short text, reply comment, or I do post some video replies depending on what the if it's something that would be better addressed through video or just a simple yes or no or, reply comment, text comment.
Craziest question you've received?
Nothing that I can really think off the top of my head as far as like a question, but as far as some of the videos that I've posted from inside my pig barn, I get a lot of people that, I guess for lack of using terms, don't quite understand modern pig production. And so I've tried to dispel some of that, but I also use it a little bit to poke, I guess, poke back a little bit. You know, people love to poke the farmer and say, you know, you're doing it wrong and this is the way you should do it. And a lot of my responses, you know, kind of go back to, well, if you think this is the way it should be done, how come you're not doing it yourself? Or, you know, what's stopping you from doing it this way? And so I try to have a little bit of fun with it, you know, using it that way. But I also do like to, you know, post legitimate replies that have some content, you know, really try to show people this is the way that I raise pigs or raise crops or, you know, whatever the case may be. I just try to bring a little educational aspect to maybe a little bit of satire and poking back a little bit.
Do you ever actually hear from farmers who are critical of what you're doing?
Not so much. I've had a few comments from, so my pig production system, I'm a production partner for a local farm here within our county. And I do get some comments periodically about, raising pigs outdoors. And that's, we used to do that 25 years ago until we decided against that. And, so I do get some comments from people still raising the pigs outside saying, you know, that's the way it should be done. And this is the way I do it. And I'm like, that's fine. I mean, it's great that we have the option of raising the pigs the way we want to, whether it's an indoor setting or back outside, either in dirt or dirt lots or concrete lots. So I do get some comments from fellow farmers about mostly that aspect.
We had some video that we used probably more than we should have up until about 5 years ago of an outdoor pig operation. And we would occasionally hear from, come on, you're so outdated. Show what it really looks like. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And then we would post some of that more on a, if it was a story, use that video if it was more of a, if it fit, let's just say it that way. And however the farmer was that you were talking about. But yes, it is a lot of confinement. And there are people who have problems with confinements. But let's face it, we wouldn't raise as many pigs if we didn't have that type of setup. I mean, that's just flat out how it works.
Yeah, well, that's kind of one of the things that I've tried to portray a little bit is that, you know, the number of farmers is dwindling. And so, you know, the world is growing in spite of the number of farmers dwindling. And so the production per farmer has had to go up to keep up with demand. And we need to supply that. So we have had to find ways to be more efficient. And that was one of the first things to be more efficient is to bring the pigs inside and do it in that setting.
Okay, so your farm has some pigs. It looks like it has some soybeans, probably some corn. What else is on your operation there, Chad?
I do raise a little bit of wheat, and mostly just for a spot to potentially move some pig manure in the summertime. And then I also am pretty conservation-minded, and so I do use cover crops on my farm. My goal is to be to use cover crops on 100% of my acres. And so having the wheat as well has given me an opportunity to try a few more cover crops that I wouldn't typically be able to use in a corn and soybean rotation. So I just kind of like to try some different things on limited acres. And the wheat was one of those things that it served two purposes. One for experimental on number one, I haven't grown wheat before in the last, since about, oh, I've grown 3 wheat crops now, I believe. And so it's been fun to try to learn how to grow wheat. It's given me an opportunity to try different cover crops. And so just a lot of different things that have come along with growing wheat.
So are you only planting it in the fall or are you doing some spring wheat?
Just fall seeded wheat.
Okay. Yep. So then what do you put in after in June, July when you take it out?
So last year I did a 5 or 6 way mix of cover crop, annual ryegrass, some cereal rye, radishes, rapeseed. I'm missing a couple there, but I've just worked with a local seed dealer on saying, hey, I'm going to be taking some wheat out and I really don't have a goal in mind. I just want to want to try to seed something, to look at something a little bit different that most people aren't looking at here in the area. So it's just giving me that opportunity to try a few things.
Is your wheat to the point of, I mean, is that only used as a feed, or are you finding someone to sell that crop to?
So I'm selling it as grain. We have a CGB terminal that's about half an hour away that is our closest wheat market. Otherwise, the next closest is about 2 hours from home. So it's market access is pretty limited in the area. I do have a local neighbor that likes to take the straw for bedding for his cow-calf operation. So that's another outlet for the wheat straw.
Where you're at in Illinois, it's kind of rare to have wheat. Where's the closest wheat field other than yours around you? And I call it West. You're really kind of that almost borderline West Central, but you're still kind of West North.
Yeah.
It's always, because since Illinois is so long, Central can be a really big section of the state.
Yeah. Yeah. I consider myself Northwest, I guess, but that doesn't mean much. So the next closest wheat field, I do have, there is one farmer down by Aledo, which is 10 miles from home here, that he does grow a little bit of wheat. But outside of that, it's pretty much the primary use for wheat in the area is a place to possibly spread manure in the summer. And then maybe some straw. Otherwise, there's not much. Years ago, a lot of people were planting it for a spot to go with manure in the summer. But now that we have more modern pig barns with 8-foot deep pits, we're set up to hold a year's worth of manure. So as long as everything goes well and we don't have a major water leak or something like that, we can pretty much just plan on pumping in the fall.
Yeah, pumping in the fall or in the spring if somebody forgot something or decided something was a little too pricey and they want to go the manure route instead, which was probably what happened last year.
Yeah. I think most farmers in general that have access to pig manure, they're not getting rid of that to anyone else. They're putting it on their own fields. And so that there's not much of a market for accessing manure unless you have your own way of producing manure.
Now, it's been a few too many years for me to drive exactly around your neighborhood, but I used to cover in that area. How many confinement operations, how many large cattle operations are around you? Do you feel like you're above average for your area? Or, I'm sorry, for your state? Or is it much more of a crop area?
Yeah, so I'd say, I think if I remember right, that Mercer County is last figure that I've seen, which was a couple of years ago, was Mercer County was number 5 in the state for pig production. We don't have much for a feeder cattle market. It's mostly cow-calf. Otherwise, I mean, there's a lot of farmers that have, 40 to 50 head cow-calf type operations. We don't really have too many that are much larger than that, or really much smaller. But otherwise the main part of the county is pig production and cow calf and row crops.
Are you living in a place where you grew up?
So right now I'm an asphalt farmer. I'm living in town Viola. So my farm's about 10 minutes away. So I'm close by to where I grew up. My house is where I grew up is about a half mile away from the farm. So I'm still in my home area.
Do you have other family that farms?
Yeah. So I farm with my dad. He's turned 65, 66. He just turned 66 this year. He's semi-retired. I came back to the farm full time in 2013, and I've pretty much been operating and managing the entire farm since 2013. My dad did have a health scare back in 2011. He had cancer, which really took the wind out of his sails. And I think that also helped him realize that, that I was capable of taking over the farm, and he wanted to travel more with mom and dad or with my mom. And she was approaching retirement age and as well. And so it just made sense. It was a good fit at that time for me to come back to the farm and start operating and managing everything.
But aren't they supposed to come into town and you're supposed to go sit and be at the home place? Do I need to have a help in this conversation, be a mediator?
Yeah, no. So they don't actually live on the farm either. They live about 6 miles away from our home farm. And so, you know, we're both living off the farm, but yeah, it is kind of one of those things where it's interesting that I'm living in town and they're still living out in the country.
So what were you doing prior to 2013?
So I graduated from Illinois State in 2008 with a double major in agribusiness and agronomy. I went to work in the FS system, GrowMark system, with Gold Star FS. I was a crop sales associate with Gold Star for about 5.5 years. And so that was where I really got my base established with, you know, you can learn only so much in college before you gotta just get your hands dirty and get your hands on something. And that was, if I had to go back and do it again there, I still wouldn't come back to the farm full time right out of college. That was an experience that just cannot be replaced, period.
For a number of reasons, and it's not just an agriculture farm business. That's plenty of businesses that, you know, if it's a family operation, it's like you need to go learn how somebody else is the boss before you either think what I've done is a really good idea or what I've not done is a really good idea, so you know for yourself. So you're not alone.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it provided you the perspective to really kind of focus, yes, this is what I really want to do.
Yeah, and it I'd say the biggest takeaway that I received in those 5.5 years working off the farm was I was still living in Viola and our farm's in Viola. So I was working on the farm as well on the side, but my experience with Gold Star was working with all the different customers. I got to see all of their farm operations, what worked for them, what didn't work for them, things that they were trying. And so it allowed me to see that perspective and kind of piece together all of the things that worked for people and to be able to bring those ideas back to my farm as well and try to make those things work that I found interesting. It was the best thing that I could have done, I feel.
So you're in a farm family. So how'd you get involved with Illinois farm families? And tell me what that is.
Yep. So I've been working with Illinois Farm Bureau as a member, and I was on the State Young Leader Committee for 4 years back in the, I think it was 2015 to 2019, served on the State Young Leader Committee. I've been involved in young leaders on the Mercer County level, involved in a few things on the state level with Illinois Farm Bureau. So that's really where I got started with Illinois Farm Families, which is a coalition between Illinois Farm Bureau, Illinois pork, Illinois beef, Illinois corn, Illinois soy, Midwest dairy, all the different commodity organizations here in Illinois. And that's, you know, they all work together. You know, all the different commodity groups have their own kind of individualized message based on their commodity. But at the end of the day, the messaging is pretty unified. You know, we're just trying to promote families and farms and help further agriculture here within the state and across the nation.
And at what point did you become an actor and how did that come about?
So I don't know really how it came about. I've done a lot of media interviews over the years. And I think I was, when I first came back to the farm is really when some of that started, got involved in Farm Bureau and I was starting down the journey of using cover crops, and that was pretty much unheard of in this area and still relatively unheard of. And so I think people saw that and like, oh, this young kid, I was 27 coming back to the farm, that, you know, he's really, really doing some different things on the farm. So I started getting talked to from numerous people, and it's led to a lot of different opportunities over the years, and then working with Illinois farm families as well through Farm Bureau. It's been a great opportunity, and I've learned a lot over the last few years.
And this was a Super Bowl ad in February, and which means you had to film it before. And was this a national ad that was done?
This ad was solely in the state of Illinois, or in Illinois media markets, TV mm-hmm. market, outside of Chicagoland as well. That market's pretty expensive from what I've heard to tap into during the Super Bowl. And so basically the rest of the state of Illinois media markets got to see the Super Bowl commercial on that day. And filming was done back in the end of August, first part of September on my portion on the farm. And it was about half a day long experience. And I've had one or two of those before. So I kind of knew what to expect going in, and it was a pretty good experience.
You mean this was your second commercial?
No, actually it was my first commercial, but the whole filming and cameras.
I gotcha.
And the big setup.
Yeah. Those cameras, when they bring lots of lights and lots of audio, and it does kind of, it's not just a simple, hey, one camera gets out of the vehicle, sticks the microphone in and asks you a couple of questions. It's a much bigger, a bigger deal. What'd you think of the whole experience when you were filming it? Did you have any idea it was going to be what it, I mean, of course you knew at that point it was going to be a Super Bowl ad, but did you think it would get the attention that it did?
I don't know. I guess I tend to downplay a lot of things until I really see the results. And so I knew in the back of my mind, I knew it would be a pretty big deal, but on the surface, you know, working with the people, there was no high pressure. Like, this is going to be a Super Bowl commercial. Let's do this once, you know, let's take a few takes of this. And luckily, my part of the video or the Super Bowl ad, I didn't have any words, I didn't have any lines. So it was pretty easy for me to just kind of, you know, walk around on the farm and be a part of that way. So it was about as easy of an experience as anyone could ever ask for, honestly.
Well, when they don't let you do lines, that means you can't get your SAG card. You know, in Hollywood, once you speak, you're in the union. So, see, they're just trying to not. You demand, next time I'm in an ad, I want to speak. I want to say something.
Yeah. Well, I've told people that have told me I did a really good job in the commercial. I'm like, well, I didn't really do anything besides look pretty for the camera. But if Silent Movies ever comes back and this becomes a thing again, that maybe I'd have a role in that.
So I want to make sure the ad did air in Chicago or did not?
It did not air in Chicago.
But everywhere else in the state?
Yes. But then right after the Super Bowl, the commercial was launched via social media in that market. So it was much, much better bang for the buck to go that route.
Totally. I totally get that. So I guess my question is, why is it important to speak to an audience that might not know as much about farming as someone else, and why they need to know what it is that you're doing in Viola, Illinois?
Yeah, so there's obviously a pretty big disconnect between farmers and consumers, and as time goes on, we are further removed, or consumers are further removed from the farm, and farmers are also consumers. I think that's something that we also take for granted, that not only are we talking to the everyday family in Chicago, but we're also needing to talk to our own families and our own neighbors and friends. And so that was one thing that we really wanted to drive home, was that 96% of farms in Illinois are family owned and operated. If you would poll just an average consumer in Chicago or anything like that, they assumed less than half of farms were family owned and operated, which means there was a pretty large disconnect there that we realized and wanted to make that connection. And most consumers, if you would ask them, they trust family farmers. And so that was really the main thing that we were trying to drive home, is that, you know, that's corporate farming is not reality. It's largely family farms that are still producing the food and the fiber and the fuel for your family. And the fact that we are family farmers, and we're just, our farms have changed over the years. Our farms have gotten larger. We have bigger, more generations involved in the farm. People are living longer, so there's could be three generations on the farm. So we just wanted to show consumers that we are still farming. We're family farms. We're still out here. The landscape looks different, but we're still here.
How open is your farm for tours? I mean, do you let people want people to come by and see what it is that you're doing?
Yeah, I guess I've never really put it out there that my farm is open, but I do post a lot on social media, so I feel my farm is kind of open from that aspect. If there's anyone that asks me a question about, hey, I want to see your planting equipment, or hey, I want to see inside your pig barn, I post a lot, like I said, on social media, either Facebook or TikTok. So that's kind of one way that I have opened up my farm per se, is just by showing the things that I do day to day on the farm. Now, I would be open to, if people wanted to come see my farm or, you know, take a look at something, I would be open to that. It's just a lot easier for me to just go the route of social media.
Do you think that the TikTok and Facebook, is it marketing or is it education?
I'd say it's a combination of both. I try to make mine as educational as possible, but at the same time, you know, you have to kind of market yourself a little bit and show, I like to show kind of who I am and a little bit of the humor. I'm not the most funny type person. I do appreciate a good joke and love humor, but I have a hard time kind of bringing it across through some of my videos. But I do like to, you know, bring an element of humor and, but also, you know, the real reason I'm on social media and TikTok is to further agriculture and just show what I'm doing and help promote it.
Do you think that through social, you've ever changed someone's mind on how they view a farmer or farming in general?
I believe so. I mean, I don't know how things would look today, I guess, as far as making that connection between farmers and consumers without social media. Granted, that's kind of the era that I grew up in. Going off to college, that was one of my first things in college, freshman in college, was social media, Facebook. But I think, you know, it's hard to change someone's mind these days. It seems like the only thing you can really do is put the information out there, to get them to at least, number one, think is the main thing about it, to think, well, maybe there is a different side to this, and maybe I'm not necessarily right, or, you know, take another look instead of just being ingrained in whatever your thought may be. So I don't know. I guess I would say that I've probably changed someone's mind, but I think the biggest thing for me is I just want people to think a little bit more about it.
Have a face.
And all that.
And have a face of what farming is. Not just this big green machine that's rolling through the field, but it's Chad Bell driving that machine.
Yeah, and I think there's people here locally that, you know, we can even go within our county. Our county is largely rural. The biggest town we have is Aledo, and it's 3,300 or 4,400. So it's,
it used to have a Hardee's. Does it still have the Hardee's?
No, the Hardee's is now.
Oh, so not even big enough to have the Hardee's anymore. But it's a small town. Aledo is not a big place.
Aledo's the county seat. That's the biggest town in our county. And you don't have to go too far out off the farm to find people in our county that just don't fully understand agriculture or are as removed as someone in Chicago from the farm. And so we always think that, oh, we got to help build consumer awareness in Chicago, but we also completely forget the fact that there's people within our own communities that don't understand what it is we do. And so it's just, one of my things is just trying to show what I do on my farm and just put it out there. So when someone's driving down the road, down past a field, they say, oh, well, that green stuff that's growing out there, it's not corn or beans, it's a cover crop, and it's slowing down erosion and improving water quality, and just one of those things that people don't necessarily think about. They just drive down the road and see a corner soybean field and don't think twice about it.
Well, I'm going to guess 40 years ago, the people that were not working in agriculture and maybe not teaching, the vast majority of those other jobs were going to one of three different John Deere facilities in the Quad Cities because they were able to drive. Now yes. There's other manufacturing or places to work. And so it's not even, you don't even have that secondary level of connection that you used to have for the people who made, whether it was the planter or the combine that are made 30 miles away from you.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the way it's going these days. There's, like I said, there's, and you know this as well as I do, there's a lot less farmers, period, and people involved in agriculture, period. So it's, we have, there's just a lot more people that we need to touch with agriculture and just show the day-to-day type of things that when they're driving down the road, they know what they're looking at, or at least wonder what they're looking at.
Let's move ahead to 2023 real quickly. What is it you're going to, what's the plan on percentage breakdown of what you want to grow? And has that changed over the winter because of pricing?
So I'm pretty strict or old school when it comes to cropping. I'd like to be about 50-50 corn soybeans with a 20 or 30 acres of wheat. And so that's, I'm pretty much sticking with my program. I don't vary too much, but it does look like right now, in spite of high fertilizer prices, that as long as my cost accounting is reasonably accurate, that corn looks like a better crop to grow here in 23 than soybeans for sure. And right now, wheat looks awful. Looking at today's prices and what the expenses are that I have in there. So I just pretty much stick to what I know right now.
Do you have enough moisture, or do you still need some recharge around you?
Well, we've been getting quite a bit of rain, actually, and very little snow. But actually right now, yesterday I spread urea on my wheat, and the ground is as dry as it can be. I didn't pick up any mud on the tractor tires or anything. So it's right now we're dry on top. And I haven't been checking any tiles to see what kind of subsoil moisture we have. But with the significant rains that we have been getting, I have thought that it would stay wetter longer than it has. So obviously that moisture is going somewhere and it's not running off.
So were you dry in 22? I mean, did your crop suffer from lack of moisture?
No. If anything, we were just in time moisture. We were never overly wet and we were never overly dry. It was kind of one of those perfect scenarios. We did have a dry June up until the end, and I think it was June 23rd or 5th we caught about 4 inches of rain that day. Otherwise we hadn't had basically anything since about middle of May. So we were looking pretty dry and things were kind of looking a little suspect at that point, but once we got that 4 inches of rain, it's like the faucet just kind of turned on and we'd catch a half inch here, three quarters there. So we didn't really catch any big rains, but we just kept things going.
In the hog barn, any of those decisions to expand or shrink a herd, are those anything that you have to do, or you're just there to, you're executing the play called in the huddle?
I'm executing the play call in the huddle. I would love to build another barn in the future. With my dad kind of being aging out of the farm and wanting to slow down further, I'm kind of in a tough spot with the size of my row crop farm that I don't feel like I can afford someone full time on the farm, but part time labor is hard to find. So I feel like I'm kind of in a rut or in a spot where I'm just not sure exactly what to do. If I want to continue to expand the farm, I'm kind of in a spot right now.
As you look at 2023, how do you feel about, you mentioned your cost accounting, mentioned some of the prices and the inputs. How do you feel economically about the coming year?
I'm pretty mixed, I guess. And it depends on how much marketing information you listen to or and how much of it you believe or really get caught up in. But, you know, I guess I'm mixed from the fact that most people are forecasting lower prices. And so our income's going to be down. Just as of today, it looks that way. But, you know, we know how black swan events kind of work now and that they can come out of nowhere. So it's hard to say. I mean, I guess I'm kind of in the middle, but obviously being a farmer, we're, even if we're not expressing it, we are optimistic because I'm still here. I'm still here. I'm still planning to farm. So obviously there's some prospect of prosperity that I'm hoping for. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Well, your DNA test came back positive for optimism, then you are a farmer, even if it is sometimes masked in pessimism at the coffee shop or something like that.
Yeah, I know. By the end of a crop year, I'm getting kind of down, and then winter comes, and it's just in time to allow me to recharge a little bit. So I'm in a much better spot now in middle of March than I was in the end of December.
Sounds good. Well, Chad, I appreciate the time. Good luck in 2023, and we hope to talk to you again.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
My thanks to Chad Bell. We've put some of his social media accounts throughout this podcast. So if you're curious about what it is that he does and you want to follow him along, we've helped you out. This is a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. I'm Paul Yeager. If you have any feedback for us, you can always send us an email at markettomarket@iowapbs.org. We'll see you next Tuesday for our next installment of the MTOM Show Podcast.